I spilled
the tea.
I spilled the tea. I spilled like ketchup and mustard on my boy genius shirt. No. So I was going to wear that today, but like it's
still wear. You guys still wear it. Come on.
Yeah, you gotta. You just gotta like spill ketchup and mustard all over the entire thing and then wash it. And then it's
the
like
the thing
a
is,
tie-dye.
You gotta like spill like mustard on the ketchup part and then ketchup on the mustard part, and they cancel each other out and like cleans it out.
PEMDAS, right?
And it becomes relish.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to relish this opportunity talking about this great album here on the podcast. We're talking about Lucy Dacus's home videos on I've Been Meaning to Listen to That. Click.
Remember that record that you bought me like 2 years ago? Well, I just remembered that it's sitting in the closet. So I called you up just to tell you I've been meaning to listen to That. I've been meaning to listen to That. Why don't you come over and talk about it? Ooh, ooh, ooh. Why don't you come over and talk about it?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to I've Been Meaning to Listen to That, the podcast where we go through albums we've been meaning to listen to and use as a conduit to learn about each other and our guests. I'm Andrew Ambrose Lee.
I'm Harper Thompson.
I'm Stanley Philippe.
And
I'm here.
Yeah, Sean.
It's me.
Sean Wilkinson, former co-host and current producer and current friend and current Lucy Dacus friend. Pal, listener, he's here also.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
He's our partner in crime, if you will.
Oh, you better auto-tune that one.
Partner in crime.
But hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Welcome to I've Been Meaning to Listen to That. We're here to talk about Lucy Dacus's home video, which is a Andrew and Sean pick. It's like a combo pick today. What is your history and preconceived notions with Lucy Dacus just as a blanket figure?
I mean, I was like trying to think about that earlier, and I don't have, I want to say, because I was looking up when her first, because I think her first single was I Don't Want to Be Funny Anymore, which I think came out in like 2016, which seems like forever ago. But I was trying to remember, like, there was a period where iTunes would put out like free songs, you know? And I think there was maybe one of them, and that may have been how I first heard about her. I love Boy Genius. I love all three of them. I think Lucy has gotten more recognition through Boy Genius, but I think she's also kind of the like unsung hero of Boy Genius. Her voice is just so buttery smooth, beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love her like lower register. I think it's great. I think with this record too, it was, I think VBS was one of the first songs I heard from it. And I think I kind of wrote it off as a religious record. And I was never really that religious. And so I think I kind of dismissed it and never gave it a big chance. But coming back to it, I'm glad we had these extra few days to ruminate on the record too. Because I feel like I've kind of connected to it a little bit more listening to the lyrics. And yeah, I don't know. But so I guess she's kind of always been in the background. But only within the last few years have I really kind of started listening to her more and connecting. And there's a lot to, I mean, we'll get into it. There's a lot to say about it. It's devastating. And there's a lot that I think I wouldn't have connected with even like a year ago that I do now. And so I think we're, for me, visiting this at a really great time.
I was a little later to her than you were. I think my first introduction was Night Shift, which is off of Historian. Mm-hmm. Night Shift is like, to me, one of the greatest songs of all time.
It slaps.
It's so good. Like, I think I heard it and then I listened to it on repeat for at least a week. Like, I'm a really obsessive listener. So I will just, I'm like one of those people. Like, I think it's really scary when at Spotify Wrapped, when they give you those stats at the end of the year. Like, they told me that I listened to like Wonder by Shawn Mendes like 155 times in a row. Like,
Wild
I didn't
Wild
stop.
Crocodile himself.
And that I had listened to it like over 350 times in the whole year. So like, I am an obsessive listener, but like Night Shift is definitely one of those songs for me that really hit And so then after that, I kind of got into the rest of her music, and she was the first boy genius girl that I really connected to. And then I got into boy genius after that, and then I got into the other two. And, you know, I love them all. And this album, I was so excited for it to come out that I like pre-ordered the vinyl, and then I saw her in concert, and it was so fun. It was such a great show.
You know, I was listening to this podcast a few years ago, and they dedicated a month to this artist I won't mention, but I thought it was really great. And so I messaged the podcast, and I was like, listen, like, here are my thoughts. And then through this conversation, I got a chance to actually appear on the podcast a few times. And a year later, I was asked to be a co-host on this podcast. And then during that year, I was introduced to this artist or this group called Boy Genius, and it became my favorite album of 2023. And so I didn't know Lucy before all of that. Like, I had no connection, understanding, awareness of Lucy. And then Boy Genius drops, I know Phoebe. And then I'm like, man, who is this like powerhouse songwriter, singer, just presence that I, again, had no idea of. And I didn't really discover her after that. I was just so obsessed with that record, the record. And so listening to home video, like, it just confirmed everything that I got a glimpse of on the record. Like, she, and I just want to get into this because it's like she's one of the artists that I wish I would have seen at a music festival and discovered there. You know, it would have been so cool to just kind of stumble upon a Lucy show and be like, holy shit, like, who's this person that's so grounded, so aware, so confused, so emotional, so fun? Like, it's just the whole package when it comes to artists that are real artists that have artistry. And so I'm pumped to talk about this. But before this album, never listened to Lucy, a Lucy project. So I do love Lucy as well.
So I knew of Phoebe first from this podcast in 2021. We did a Punisher episode with Addie Weirich, and that was a really great episode. And then I was like vaguely aware of the other two, Lucy and Julian. And then I stumbled upon this record, Home Video, and I really loved it. I really connected with it like pretty immediately. Also, like, having similar-ish religious upbringings and backgrounds, it's not exactly the same, but like some parallels there that really resonate with me. A lot of that real compassion for friends that I feel and felt. I also connected to, I think the song that really flummoxed me was Please Stay. And that song flummoxed me immediately the first time. It made me like sob. And that song became a song that would be there for me at like some of my lowest moments. Like, I remember one time I went on this really like kind of frankly like embarrassing dates and like this really bad experience. And then it was like I got home and it was like 2 a.m. and it was like, I didn't have anyone to call. I didn't have it. I was like, just like so emotionally distraught. I was like having these really bad suicidal ideations and stuff. And then I just like played this song on a loop, like at 3 a.m., 5 a.m., that just got me through that day. And it just like, that's just like a song I go back to every so often. And it was mostly that song. It's not as much this album, although I love this album. I really like this album for like the 3 years it's been out. Listening to this time, I really connected. I really loved the other songs. I really like, I'm really like, holy shit, I relate to this song in this way. I relate to this song. So like, yeah, then I got super into Boy Genius, and like, but there's still a lot of gaps. I still don't know Historian that well. I only know Sprained Ankle from Julian. So it's a lot of fun to like, kind of like, they're making these generational statements for like young adults, and I haven't even listened to a lot of them yet. And I know they'll be meaningful to me, and I know I'll enjoy it, but I haven't gotten around to it yet. So it's very exciting.
It really captures how unoriginal our experiences are, because we always think, right? Like Andrew, you expressed, you know, what you were going through and how it might have felt like you were the only person that was going through that process and that possibility. And then to connect with the song that is kind of saying, you're not the only one, and there's a reason why you should persevere. And it's just like, it's amazing that music, when artists decide to really be vulnerable and to be honest, that we find ourselves really in that music. And that's why I love artists like Lucy, because even if you don't know all of her, you can listen to a snapshot of her discography and right away know, like, hey, like, she's one of my people. You know what I mean? And I felt like, I'm like, yo, like, she, like, that home video idea, like, I felt like I was watching her home videos in her basement during the pandemic, being like, oh shit, like, this is happening here and that happened there. And I had the same video that my dad recorded too, you know, like, and it's beautiful. It's just really cool to have these moments, you know?
So let's get into themes of this album. Let's talk about this album in a broad way. Who would like to go first?
For me, this album feels like a response to if someone asked you, like, what would you tell your younger self, you know? Or like, if you could go back and tell yourself something, like, and so this feels like her response to that. And I think she's quoted in like an interview saying, I think it's Pitchfork article or something, I can't undo what I've done, I wouldn't want to. So that thing of like focusing on the past, you know, is to some degree not really worth it, you know? Like, that's not to say, you know, there's not things we wish we couldn't change, but like ruminating on them won't change it. We learn from them and we move on. There's always going to be things we want to pick apart and change about ourselves, but it's, yeah, there's no use in losing sleep over them. So in one of the bands I play in, I wrote my first ever like song for it. And it came from this idea in my head of like, when you move into like an apartment or a house or something, there's always going to be something wrong with the place, right? Like there's like a crack in the wall. You get that fixed. Then the AC is going to go out. Then you fix the AC, the washing machine is going to go out, right? These things happen, but we're not like, oh, this place isn't worth living in. You know, and that's kind of how I feel about like ourselves, you know, like there's always gonna be something we want to pick apart, but we beat ourselves up for it. Like, why do we do that? You know, that doesn't mean we're not worth, you know what I'm trying to say? So that's kind of what this feels like. Like, why change the things that are just gonna, yeah.
Like what you're talking about is, you know, not ruminating on what you can't change, the past that you can't change, your experiences, your upbringing, maybe mistakes you made when you didn't have the tools to fix whatever, or you lashed out at someone when you didn't like know how to cope or whatever. I think this album is a lot about wisdom. It's like home videos filtered through this gauzy haze of nostalgia, but sharpened by wisdom. Like, these, so the things that happened to you in the past, maybe mistakes, maybe these embarrassing things, maybe blah, blah, blah. Like, I learned from them. And also, I'm able to look at my past and go, oh, that was that. That, like, maybe I was, like, wrestling with this, with my queerness, but I wasn't ready to express it with my friend at the time, you know, but that love was real.
Two things about that. One is, if is it just me, or do we never ask people who are going through some serious shit, like, if you can go back, like, what would you change? Because if you're in a downward spiral, you would probably change a lot. You know what I mean? Right. Like, usually, like, when people ask me that question, I know I work, they ask me a couple of times, and it's usually when I'm, like, in a really good place, and we're trying to kind of showcase that things are going to be really great at the end of whatever journey you're on. And so you're like, oh, well, maybe I wouldn't change anything because I'm, like, happy here. But there were moments in that journey where I wasn't happy. And so if you asked me during that moment, I'd be like, I changed this. I changed that. To sit. You know, it's kind of, like, interesting. And I think one of the big themes of this album is time. Like, She recorded this in 2019 and clearly was thinking a lot about her past experiences, where she was now and where can she go from there. So she took the time to think about it. It took her 2 years to drop the album. So there was time between recording and dropping. And then because it dropped during the pandemic, she had time to also either rebuild some of the relationships, to question and to challenge and to face some, because she mentioned in an interview where, you know, she had to talk to people that she referenced on this album, be like, hey, okay, let's have a conversation, because I kind of either called something out or exposed something, right? So taking the time to actually mend or build those relationships. So I think that the idea of time, and time is usually manipulated in a linear fashion, but it's so all over the map, right? Like you could be here, but thinking about something in the future or the past. You could be in the future, but still like in a present state. Like there's so many ways of playing it. And I think that this album, the idea of a home video, like you said, Andrew, it's like you can play this like granular image, but it's so clear in your memory, you know? So that clarity that comes from your cognition while you're watching something that's a bit hazy. And if you didn't experience it, that person that's also watching along is kind of like, I need you to connect those dots. And I think Lucy connects dots on this album.
Well, another kind of interesting just idea about time with this album is just particularly to one of the song Thumbs. Just not to get too much into the song, but what's really interesting about that one is I think that she played that song live for several years before she recorded it. And also kind of relating to like the idea of the home video as something analog, right? That's not like distributed. You know, she asked people to turn off their phones or put their phones away and not record while she played that song for like years. And it didn't really leak at all. That's my knowledge. Like it didn't really leak until, you know, at the time she was playing this in one of more intimate spaces with people who understood and like respected her. And like she had the like, you know, this incredible time to just like have a relationship with this song that I feel like most artists wouldn't have with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I mentioned the whole like music festival thing. Like, I remember seeing Chance at a Blues Fest in Ottawa right before Acid Rap dropped. And
I don't love my wife yet.
And there are a lot of people in the crowd that didn't know Chance at all. And you could see them being like converted in real time.
Yeah.
And it's that conversion that's so cool about an artist like Lucy. Like it'd be unreal to hear Thumbs like 4 years prior. And then her being like, hey, like her recognizing how important this song is and saying like, hey, I'm trusting you all with this exercise. And then them actually delivering that same trust it makes the song even more impactful.
I'd say the theme that the first one is just compassion. Like the meaning of the word compassion is to suffer with someone, like to have experienced pain alongside someone. First of all, just compassion for her younger self, as she was going through a lot of pain, a lot during that time growing up, when I don't think she was cognizant of the pain she was going through. The pain, like sharing the pain with friends, a lot of people who have been kind of who are kind of under the thumb of patriarchal oppressive ideals. Like she is showing solidarity with them, a lot of queer solidarity in songs like Thumbs and Please Stay. Like there could be an implication that this friend who is having these suicidal thoughts, it might be trans or might be a queer person. Like the cut your hair, change your name, change your mind is like, oh shit. Like I didn't have that reading initially.
I didn't have it until now. So
yeah. So that's a read. I don't know. Like,
yeah, right.
It could be supplemental in that way. I don't know if that was a literal like meaning of it. Like she says in this interview, compassion is really easy from many steps away. Maybe what I felt in the heat of the moment was confusion, and I wanted to feel compassion. Now I actually can. So that's the time Selena was talking about, that that took time to cook until now, where she could release it.
Hold up.
So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is why it's so challenging in 2024 to try to navigate these social media waters because we don't let people give people time to cook, right? So like that initial, right? Like she wanted to be compassionate, but it was confusion. And if she didn't get a chance to actually cook on that and let that kind of stew and stuff, like then she would never get to that level of compassion. And I think grace is so important, you know, give people grace to actually like work through their initial reactions because you're just based off of your own upbringing, exposures, experiences. You have a certain kind of way of viewing an event, an experience, a comment. And if you don't have a chance to actually do more education and more living, then you can never like change.
The setting of Christianity, suburban Christianity, is so important for that reason. Like that, I think that grace is what she's retained from her Christian background that is good. That like, you know, so for God so loved the world that he gave his one only son. And the idea of, you know, we're all sinners and all that stuff. Like the good side of that those Christian beliefs is, yes, that grace and that that humility of like, yeah, we are all kind of broken and flawed. We're all trying our best and we should forgive each other. The bad side is this environment can engender a lot of shame, you know, shame of your queerness, shame of just like this one, these bad things that you did when you were younger and you didn't know how to fix. And now you're just like holding on to it and not forgiving yourself or anything like that. It like engenders a lot of shame. And I think she's trying to untangle those things from those two parts, you know.
This is related, but like kind of unrelated. But like one thing I appreciate about the boys, the boy genius boys, is I think they balance a really fine line of being of like specificity in their songs over like generalness, you know. I don't know whether to talk about this now or when we get into thumbs, but it's a very specific, like she's describing a moment in time, you know, of like that meeting with this person's father, but it's still such a broad, like she doesn't get into details really with it. And so I just feel like they balance that well, and it makes it more where you're able to like pull your own meaning from it to some degree. Mm-hmm. Cause like, yeah, I mean, a lot of these songs are about like, you know, growing up like Christian suburbanity or suburban Christianity, I think you said, but I still pull meaning from songs like this, you know, and I think she balances that in a really beautiful way. So,
yeah, I think that all three of them are really storytellers. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this comes up a lot on the only podcast I listen to now, Films to Be Buried With, where like, you know, specificity in a story makes it more universal. Like Brett Goldstein talking about how the movie he relates to the most that he sees himself in is Lady Bird, even though he's not American, he's not a teenage girl, he's not from Sacramento, but like he saw that.
It looks like a bird.
Like, yeah. And he's like, you know, that's me. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about, is that there's something, you know, when you're getting to like into a really specific story where you can find yourself.
Because like every experience is like can break down into a feeling, you know. And so it's like even if something happened to you in regards to Christianity, it still comes back to like an overarching feeling or emotion that you get. And so it's conveying that emotion through that experience, but making it universal. Like it's hard to do, but she does it well.
Yeah. I mean, like Sean like really nailed it, or at least opened my eyes to it. It's feeling it. Like what she's able to do is like her GPS is always tracked to feeling. So even if she didn't go through that experience, she can find where that feeling connects. And then is able to extrapolate that and then say like, hey, how do I make you either understand, overfeel it, reduce that feeling to see a bit more clarity or be a bit more objective, or just fuck it, you know, like, and it's, that's what connects us. Like every single person feels, even if you're the worst person in the world, you feel something. It could be something really bad, but you feel something. And like Sean, like, yeah, it's what really allows you to live vicariously to other people's experiences, even if you have absolutely nothing in relation to that person or to that experience. Because if you could tap into a feeling, then, and this is where compassion comes, where caring comes, where just being a good person comes, is can you feel what another person feels without actually being that person?
Two other themes. It's just like queer yearning is in like parallel to queer solidarity in like the song Christine and the song Cartwheel, song Triple Dog Dare.
Triple Dog Dare.
Oh,
I wrote queer longing in all caps with 4 exclamation points under Triple Dog Dare. I was like, this is it.
I don't know if she had the language at this time, but like her, there's a lust and desire there, but there's also like true care and compassion and love, just like human love beyond just like, hey, I want to get it on with you, you know, like kind of that thing, kind of that deal. And then like male mediocrity is a big theme of this album. Like I was reading this book by bell hooks, like The Will to Change. And it's, she does this really great thing where she, Stanley, in a previous episode, you said something along the lines of masculinity is inherently toxic. You said that in one of our episodes. And then what bell hooks does is she's differentiates maleness from patriarchal maleness, patriarchal dominion, domination, which there is nothing good about. Every young boy is loving, creative, beautiful, worthy of love, worthy of parental care. Jury's out on that, but like patriarchal, like masculinity and how it's tied with white supremacy, how it's tied with capitalism, how it's tied with imperialism. That is the thing that is inherently toxic. Everything about that is ruinous. And then it's like, in this album, it subconsciously talks about how all those things are tied with her upbringing in suburban Christianity, like evangelical Christianity. I think a lot of this album is about how she has that line in that Boy Genius album, like always an angel, never a god, where she positions herself as this savior and as this like being of light and of compassion that heals people and loves people and sits with them in their pain and their grief. But I think in this album, she communicates a lot of the consequences, the personal emotional consequences of that. It's like the future is a benevolent black hole. I showed you the light, but the dark felt darker than before. Like she's telling us how positioning herself in this way, trying to maneuver through a patriarchal world, is creating a lot of like internal suffering. And the way she wants to get out of it is through kind of returning to this childlike love, this really like this pure childlike love, where at the end of like Triple Dog Dare, like she just like escapes this world and lives on a boat with her friend, quote unquote, like her. And then like
her roommate.
Her roommate.
Her roommates.
Like her boat maid.
Her maid targ.
It's unclear whether or not their lives are better, like, but they're free.
Wow. You did such a better job of vocalizing that than I did in my notes. I just wrote dads. That was my theme, was dads.
Dads, love them or hate them.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break and get into songs right after this. Click. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to I've been meaning to listen to that. Let's get through highlight songs. Sean, what's a highlight song for you?
Well, I haven't, like, I was just listening to it on Spotify, and I didn't, on my first ever, like, listen to this album, there are a lot of songs that I was like, these are kind of sleepers, but going back and, like, listening to the lyrics, I'm like, Oh, fuck.
These are creepers.
Do the creep. What's that SNL?
Yeah.
That was an obscure
show. Yeah.
Obscure show.
That Saturday night live? But they filmed some of it on Sunday. It's confusing.
So, yeah. So Cartwheel was one that I was like, I found it kind of boring the first time I listened to it. And then I was like, oh, man, like coming at it from like a queer longing perspective, I'm like, this sucks. Like, this is exactly like I had. And I think going back to what you're saying about like time and looking back and like wisdom, I guess, like I had a friend growing up who like best friend from, I think probably fifth grade through like early high school. And yeah, I mean, we were great friends. We hung out all the time. Didn't realize until later in my life that I had a huge crush on them. And that was like my first like big queer moment, I guess. And it's
your first
like
exclusively gay moment. Like for the second one was like you watching the live action Beauty and the Beast and like LeFou. Oh, that guy.
LeFou.
Josh Gad is LeFou.
Gay icon.
I guess everyone's queer awakening.
It was Josh Gad, wasn't it? But yeah, and so just like that's a huge theme within the queer community, right? Is like crushing on someone that you just won't ever have a chance with, I guess. I mean, I guess that's like also a universal experience to some degree, but like I was also looking at it from perspective of his mom was, or I guess is still, pretty religious, knowing that like this would never really work out. And so, yeah, I don't know. Cartwheel just kind of hit hard for that. With that, and that, I think she says it in that same like Pitchfork interview, like hearing about the friend like having sex for the first time to that friend is like, oh, I'm just telling you this because we're friends. But for Lucy, it's like, man, this feels like like this is a betrayal. This is devastating. And so that's kind of where I was like looking at it too, of like seeing my friend going out and like talking about girls and like dating girls and stuff. It's like this. This is a bummer, you know.
Yeah, what a description, eh? Like that idea, eh? Like that, like your friend having no, I guess, intention of hurting you, right? Like, in fact, is trying to allow you to participate in his joy, and yet not knowing that he's causing you so much pain.
Yeah, and I can't be mad at him. Yeah, like not that I would be, but like, it's such a confusing feeling of like. Yeah, I don't know how to feel about this because, like, I want you in my life still, you know, but I can't alienate you by saying, like, that should be me, you know? So
it's kind of, it feels a little bit less like crafted. Like, there's no chorus, right? It feels a little bit more like a diary entry. Like, these are just kind of a list of my thoughts, which, you know, makes it feel kind of.
Yeah, it's like stream of consciousness. Like, I got to get all this out.
Extremely personal. Yeah.
When I was talking about like childlike love, like, there's this like Bible verse that just like loving like a child, like the idea that that's like the type of love and faith that Jesus is looking for is this idea of instead of like being like a grown adult, like always like having your doubts and like asking your questions, like wrestling and all this stuff, like just like this open, loving, childlike love. But in real life, it's that loving like that, loving like a child is not, oftentimes is not rewarded. You're sometimes you're punished or abused or neglected for trusting an adult or trusting a friend or trusting an institution. And then you kind of like put on armor to kind of maneuver through the world. And this song is like, I think that first heartbreak, that first moment you realize that maybe loving like a child isn't wise because it hurts so bad. And then when you look back, you kind of realize that, oh, when I had that childlike love, that was the best. Those are the best times of my life. And I think part of it was because you weren't trying to hold on so hard. you weren't trying to like, I think when you get older, you try to hold on and savor experiences that you have, time with your mom, time with your dad, because they'll eventually die, or like your friends, or maybe you, all that stuff. Sometimes I think why there's this nostalgia for childhood is because I don't think you were thinking about that at all. I think you were just like having fun with your friend, and then it just stopped, you know, and that's heartbreaking. You know, I think everyone has gone through something like that. And that's that feeling you were talking about. That's that it doesn't matter if it's like through a queer, it does matter, but like it also doesn't matter that it's through a queer, specifically a queer lens in this, like, you know, way. Harper, what's the highlight for you?
Oh man.
Do it. So just many. Do it. Do
Steady
it.
Thumbs. Is that what you want?
Yeah. Come on. Just go for
All
it.
All right. Let's talk about thumbs. So yeah, I mean, I just, wow. What a just truly devastating song. I think it's one thing that I like about this album as a whole is that she experiments with different kinds of instrumentation throughout the album. Like there are some songs where she's just like acoustic on guitar, basically. There are other songs where, like, you know, she does the auto tune. And then there's like this one, which has, I don't even know, Sean, you might know because you're a musician, but like, I don't know what's going on in the background, but it's very atmospheric. Yeah.
Just like synthesizers and stuff. I would have seen like different pads and stuff, but
yeah. Yeah, but it's like, so that just like the foundation of it with that atmospheric background kind of music is such an interesting place to start. And then on top of the, just kind of as a like a layer on top of it is like Lucy's like just really beautiful vocals. And then the story, which is basically a story about this like really, it's specific, like you were talking about this day she had with her friend where they go to see basically her like shitty dad. And, you know, and she's kind of reflecting a lot about, like, you know, Andrew, kind of like you were saying, patriarchy in general and dads and the specific thing and her friendship. And it's just, it's so sad. There are just like a couple lines that really, I mean, I wrote down so many lines from the song in my notes, but the ones that really strike me are like, you two are connected by a pure coincidence. Like, oh, you know, just like the fact that, you know, two people fucked and created a human and now you're here. And that has nothing to do with you. Like, you don't actually have to continue to have this relationship. That's just, you know, how we arrived here, you know. And the other one that really gets me is, I would kill him if you let me. I would kill him quick and easy. Like, that goes to like the relationship being just like, I mean, it's one about their relationship and two about the fact that she's confronted with this horrible thing right in front of her, which goes back again to like compassion, right, Andrew? So, you know, this song ties into so many of the themes that we've already talked about that go throughout this entire album. Yeah, and I just think it's like a really amazing song. And I also think about that line. I've always thought that it's like a kind of interesting companion piece to Kyoto by Phoebe Bridgers, if we're talking about like the boy genius cinematic universe. Because in that song, she goes, you know, I'm going to kill you if you don't beat me to it. And I always think about those two kind of side by side. But yeah, it's an amazing song. I'll let you guys get into it too. But wow, what a song.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I wrote, you can't help but stop and listen, like really listen, you know, that the synth in the back, like it just like, it's very angelic, like it's very like religious, like brings you to a different universe or a different kind of layer of understanding and connection. But it also has I think is the funniest line on this whole record. When she says, I love your eyes and he has them, but you have his because he was first. Like, it's just like in this moment where she's saying like, hey, like, just give me the word and I'll kill your dad. And it's just kind of a funny way of putting it, like, wow, like he's got your eyes. Well, actually, you have his because he was here first. You know, like, it just, for me, it was very playful in this moment after listening to it a few times. I'm like, oh my God, like I kind of laughed at that point. And I'm like, wow, the fact that she can make me laugh in this like emotional out of body experience just for me speaks to the greatness of this song. Like, and it's, It's like thumb, like two thumbs up on this song, because it's just like how do you even, you know, break it down to a level that isn't pure emotion?
When you're going through something like this, that's so out of body and strange and difficult, like it kind of like goes in a blur, like for me at least, it kind of goes by in a blur and I don't remember details. I just remember kind of acting automatically. The way she's able to just like recount like a screenwriter or like a film director, these little details, the way he, you know, do you get my checks on your birthday? Like he had rum and coke. I felt his eyes watch us as we left. So we went the other directions just in case he wouldn't follow us the wrong way. But like when the dad offered the ride, Lucy was polite. Lucy was just like, no, that's all right. You know, like I don't. And if you're just like watching the scene objectively, I don't think you would like really note it. You know, I don't think you would really think about like, oh, this is the climax in a movie, like this scene here.
Yeah.
But to these two characters, it's like everything's going on. These two reads are like, there's two kind of readings, interpretations of how it ended up. Is like one interpretation is Lucy held her friend and said exactly this, like the correct thing to say, the best thing to say, and comforted her in that moment. Or it's they just walked home and didn't talk about it. And then years later, she came up with this song. Like, this is what I would have said if I had the capacity at the time. The thing is, they're children. They're children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like 19 years old. They're children. And the fact that Lucy was there, a friend like this is so important because it's crucial to have someone else mirror your human experience and your worth. That's what it is. If she just did that by herself, if the friend like did this by herself and didn't bring Lucy along, it would just be this thing, this memory that she alone would have, basically. And she would carry the pain and she would suffer alone. And it's so important. I try to be that. I've had that happen. I've had friends, you know, carry that suffering with me, and none of them can fix it. None of them can fix it for me. You know, no one has ever said the exact right thing. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm all better forever. You know, like, oh shit, I'm all better forever. It's just,
if someone ever says that line and you have that realization, let me know what that line is.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
But like, you know, they sat with me and they stayed with me, you know, and they were with me in that moment and they got me through another day.
You know, it's when you, and I haven't really thought about this, but when you frame it under the idea of being a child and how that kind of escapes you, we always talk about the end of life, right? Like when you're born, you have a clock that's ticking towards your death. And then when you get to that point where you're going to die, you're hoping to be surrounded by your loved ones. And then you have a funeral where you can either kind of celebrate more in a combination of the two. And the most important people in your life will be hopefully in that moment, you know, recognizing and replaying it. But there's a death that happens before that, which is the death of your inner child. And in many ways, the friends, the people that are around you during that death are as vital as the ones that are there when your life ends. And I think what she's expressing there, it's like, I'm here with you because this person killed your inner child. Like your dad, you know, didn't allow you to flesh out your innocence, your joy, your immaturity in the most kind of positive way. There's a hardening that happens when life happens. And when you get hardened by life, the people who are around you that Andrew described, those friends that were there that didn't say the right thing, but their presence was the right presence at the right time. And it's so vital for us to have that, because we all lose our inner child, because society is set up that way, right? Like you're not allowed to just live as your most kind of pure state. And so when that escapes you, you look around and say, well, who are the people that are trying to like grab it and keep it as long as possible? And Lucy is trying on this song to keep it, and also to eliminate the source of your kind of your death.
That's why those jokes in this song are so important. Like the relative joke and the, you know, technically he was first, like that joke.
Yeah.
It makes it easier to live through that, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Like even that voice, right? That voice that, well, technically it's that kid, right? Like it's that kid that's like telling the teacher, well, actually you missed this thing. And then the teacher says like, shut up. I'm the teacher. You need to listen to me. And all of a sudden the kid goes, oh, not doing that again. And then the voice gets deeper. And then there's like a hardening, like, oh, no, 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 no. But really it's like every kid would do that, would be like, well, actually, if I calculate this right, like your dad was here first. So you know what I mean? Like, it's just so fun.
The kid from the Polar Express with the glasses. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm actually.
Yeah. Yeah. It's freaking Milhouse, you know, like it's just so yeah. Perfect.
But you need like the friend, your friends let you. If you have a good friend, you're communicating to each other that, hey, I am a safe place for you to be your inner child, aka your purest, most loving form, you know. And then also we can share the burden of adulthood, of neglect, of abuse, of all these systems acting upon us that make life intolerable.
Yes. Like sometimes we're very literal with how we progress. So, you know, when you're a kid, you watch the Flintstones and we all thought flying cars would be like the way of the future. And then the internet is like the information highway that we actually were imagining when we thought about flying cars. And the idea of time traveling, right? It's like, oh, you have to go into a thing and it just like beams you to the 40s or, you know, when racism was a thing, you know, yeah. Shout out to your Instagram.
Shout out to Taylor also, the 1930s.
Yes.
No.
You mentioned her. No Taylor. Delete that. Yeah.
Bleep her out. Yeah.
But really, you time travel through those people that allow you to return to that inner child, even for a second. And it's awesome. Like I'm thinking about like when you see a friend you haven't seen in a while and right away, like the old jokes return and the demeanor is different, you know, like that kind of reversal of whatever, you know, I like the word hardening a lot, the hardening of your real day to day, you know, having to go to work and pay your taxes and convert your Canadian money to American money, like all of those things that happen. But once you see your friends, like your real friends, it's just like jokes, fun, hilarious, trying things, making a fool of yourself. And it's so like, I'm going to cry right now. It's so valuable. Like it's what life is really about. Like it's about like just, oh my God, I don't know why I'm crying, but it's just allowing you to like to
crack open a cold one with the boys, you know.
Well, yeah, and just yeah. To let go, because like God, like life is so tiring. Like it's so tiring, and to be energized by a smile, a song, like a thought, like It's the greatest thing. Even if it's for like a millisecond, it feels like a lifetime, you know?
I mean, yeah, like, I mean, Andrew, when you came down in, what was it, December, I think. And like, I don't know, I always like freak myself out about getting together with like old friends or like, I mean, current friends even, where I'm like, oh, I'm going to be so boring, or like, I don't know. I just psych myself out with like social anxiety stuff, but it's like when you went back home, just like, I was just like, that was so lovely just to like have those few days of just hanging out. And like, it's just a great feeling, you know? So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Stanley, what's a highlight for you?
God, I don't know, this whole episode, VBS. VBS is.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the drums on it. I like the storytelling. I mean, obviously the lyrics are great. For me, she's like, she's kind of like Alanis Morissette, but like a more like subdued version where she's such a great, like sometimes you
feel Alanis like Alanis not... Morissette?
Alanis less is more set. Yeah. Where she's like, she's just able to just tell these great stories and you don't feel like you're being overwhelmed by like a Whitney Houston level of, you know, vocal performance. But it's but it hits, like it hits in the right spot. And when that like Slayer punch comes in, like you're just like, holy shit. Like that's just like it just wakes you up almost from this really cool trance. And what's the line that I like? Oh, I like when she's like, when I tell you you were born and you are here for a reason, you're not convinced the reason is a good one. Yeah. You know, and like I never thought about framing that conversation like, oh, you're here for a reason. And we always think of it as a positive thing. But then what if that person receives that and says, yeah, and that reason isn't good enough for me, so I'm out. So I think it's a great song.
I will say, like, I mean, I meant to say that about Thumbs too. But yeah, the instrumentation, I think, is really, again, like my first listen, I was like, oh, this isn't very exciting. But then it's like, well, there's, I think, a reason. Because like if she made Thumbs really flashy, it's like, well, that's going to take away from the whole point of the fucking song. Like, so yeah, I think the instrumentation on everything is really smart. And yeah, that Slayer section, like that's what I love about Night Shift too, is just like something about how like obviously the distortion, but it feels like so blown out that it, I don't know, it just kicks ass, you know?
It happens for less than you think it happens. I thought when I remembered it, I thought it happened like the Slayer at full volume and then they played the entire rest of the song. Guitars. It was just like 3 seconds of that. And it's just like, your poetry was so bad. Like, it's just,
hey, yeah.
It's so she does perfect.
That, yeah. I don't remember what other song it is, but there is a part where, yeah, I would just be guessing on whatever song it was, but there's like a drum fill that I'm like, oh, it's about to go into like a big section. And then it's just back to like, so she does a lot of like pulling you in with something really exciting and then taking it away, which I find really interesting.
Yeah, it's that less is more set.
less is more set. It's also, it's, I don't have much to say about VBS other than just, the fact that she wrote a song about VBS makes me so seen. I used to go to something like that too. And like a lot of like children's Bible schools and like these Awana things where they like make you memorize like a passage. It was a memorization contest and there's like a bobbing for apples thing. And then like when I was a kid, I always viewed obedience as the core value of my worth. And like, if I obey all these things, if I listen to this person or this authority figure, then I'll be loved or I'll be appreciated. And a lot of those like youth pastors were like so shitty to me. They were so, you know, they were clearly like going through their own shit and I'm able to like forgive them and stuff. But like they were not like some of these people were not fit to like take care of children. And like all the kids my age that were older than me would kind of like pick on me and make me feel like awful and small and stuff. And then like later, you know, the head pastor, not the youth pastors, but the head pastor of that church was kind of like outed for really sketchy allegations of emotional abuse and sexual impropriety and shit. And I'm like, I wish I fucked around and found out more at that age. You know, I wish I didn't put so much like, you know, that's really what comes to mind with that song. So, yeah.
What do you mean you wish you fucked around more and found out like
rebelled a little more yeah. Like kind of just like was more, I don't know, like I just, part of me is just like, well, that's made up and it doesn't really matter. It kind of doesn't really matter like now, like it happened and I can't change it. There's no like, sure. So it's a matter of just like living your life now in a way. But
it's, I mean, again, it's hard not to like say what if, you know?
Yeah, like, I have this like idea from movies or from TV shows of just like kids in college or kids in high school doing things that I didn't get to do or I didn't let myself do. And I'm like, well, my childhood was robbed from me. And, you know, it's like, well, and now I'm an adult and I'm a very strange adult. And, you know, it's like really hard to it's like, and I have these perceived setbacks of just like, and these internal barriers that make it very difficult to like navigate the world or find success or find happiness or find love. And I think this whole album is just Lucy saying it's okay, you know? Lucy saying that it's, one, it's okay. Two, you know now. And now, like she said this in the NPR interview, like something along to the effect of people are always saying, I wish I figured that out sooner. What if now is sooner?
Right.
Like what if the epiphanies you're going through now is sooner than you in your 80s or your 50s going,
right,
I wish I figured that out sooner.
Yeah, because you could be in your 80s looking back at your 20s and being like, damn, I wish I figured that out then. So it's like, yeah, there's no, that's like, well, at the beginning, I was like, you know, looking back, if someone asked me what I would change, I wouldn't change a thing. But it's also like, I would take more chances on things. I would, because I was the same, I was like, so obedient and like, so afraid of authority and like making mistakes and stuff. So I would absolutely make mistake, or I would absolutely now look back and say, hey, take more chances, you know?
And also that literal framing of like, what would you change? And we always kind of say like, well, I wouldn't change anything because I'm here now and I'm here in a good space. And so we believe that there's only one road to that. And I'm a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. It's like a hockey franchise. And we have a player who was on this mission to score 70 goals this year, Austin Matthews. Shout out, Austin, if you're listening to this, go Leafs, go, you're winning the cup. And people were like, oh, well, should we sit Austin for the last two games because the playoffs are around the corner? And what if he gets hurt, or what if he gets into a space where he's no longer who he was? And we believe that if we do sit him, then he's for sure going to perform really well in the playoffs. But what if he doesn't? What if sitting him ruins his mojo, right? So it's like, we don't know what will come out of anything you do now. So just do whatever the fuck you want to do. Because you not doing the thing that you want to do because you're told that you're not supposed to doesn't guarantee you a successful future. In fact, it might create more regret. So like, fuck around. And like you said, Andrew, fuck around and find out, you know? And when you find out, you might find out that like, hey, this was actually the best possible outcome. And I got both things. I got my cake and ate it too. I got to like be a child and stay a child and have fun being a child as a 45-year-old or 79-year-old or 26-year-old, you know?
Yeah. Andrew, what's your highlight?
I think Brando and Please Stay Together. Just like, first of all, just I think this Brando's the most openly comic song, funny song. It's about the same-ish subject matter about like this mediocre guy. But these other songs are like, like Partner in Crime is like, oh, Jesus Christ,
right,
this is an awful situation. Like, and then Brando is just like, isn't this funny? Like, it's the same situation, but like, but it's like, isn't this hilarious? Like this fool, you know, like,
yeah.
So it's like a breath of fresh air from these like really heavy songs. A song like Brando is like a great, like Spielberg movie in that, like, stay with me. It's like, it's kind of like, when you're watching it, you're invested in the story. Like, the story is great. You're like watching West Side Story, you're watching like Jurassic Park, and like, oh no, what's going to happen to these guys? But you're also like admiring the craft while it's happening at the same time. So like, when Lucy is like, they played oldies in the afternoon for the elderly and me and you, Fred and Ginger, black and white, I watched you watch It's a Wonderful Life. So that repetition, just the economics of the storytelling here. And then like Lucy's like songwriting craft is so excellent. Like, she's always just shooting bullseyes that when something is a little off, you're like, it really like catches your attention. So like when she says, I'll be lucky if I'm your third wife, like a slightly worse lyricist and a lyricist who's like aiming for like the easy joke is, you'll be lucky if I'm your third wife, like, because you're mediocre and you suck. But this is like, I'll be lucky if I'm your third wife, of like, oh, this is about self-image. This is about just like settling for someone who's kind of like mediocre. Like you see through him, yet you want his approval. It's, yeah, so that's really great. And then Please Stay, obviously, is just like the boy genius inclusion. It just like places me back in times where I helped people going through this feeling of being that friend and feeling helpless, but also loving your friend. But also ultimately what it boils down to is like this core belief that I still hold, like for everybody, is just like, you are a human being. Your pain is valid and you deserve life and you deserve to, but it's also like goes back to this feeling I have sometimes of it's easier for me to say that for other people than to have that set to say that to myself, like at least growing up and stuff. And so when friends that day I was talking about where I went home from that date and wanted to I was like really, really, really unwell at that moment. I needed someone to talk to about it. And then I was talking with, and then like, luckily a friend like called me and stuff and we talked it out and stuff. I was talking to this person. I was like, I don't really feel like I have anyone to just call at 2 a.m. to talk to about this. And then they were like, well, you could call me, you know, you could call me, you know. And that moment was just like so, I don't know. I don't know what I'm getting at here, but it's great. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I think what you said about like just everyone deserving to be here is like, I think, forgotten a little bit in the world today. Like, I don't know. It makes me think of like the way we treat homeless people, you know, the way we just blame them for everything and just don't recognize that they also have the right to just exist and be here. And I don't know, maybe just cut this, but I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I like that comparison a lot, because it's like our system right now, the way that we create that valuation of human life is typically based off of your financial contributions to said system, right? So if you work a 9-to-5, if you went to school, if you got married, you have kids, you have a home, all of these things contribute financially and therefore you have worth. And then we look at, you know, homeless people and we say, well, since you don't have a home, we're assuming you don't have a job, you're not actually contributing to the system, you have no value. And it's like, no, you're a human. You have value just by being alive, right? Your life is the value. And it's like, we don't really do that. And if we don't have people, whether it be a friend or a random stranger or a community organization, like a church that can help to support people, even if the practice itself or the institution that is linked to that church is very problematic, that those things can really be life-saving, because then you are telling someone you have value. And that cry of please stay is saying you have, no matter what your experiences are, no matter what you've done, you have value. And I think it's an important cry to scream out to everyone, because everyone does have inherent value.
All these material things, if they don't serve you, if they're creating this feeling that make you want to devalue your own life, then you should remove it from your life. You shouldn't remove yourself from life. You should remove that from your life, you know?
Yeah, I do also think, like, even if it's not specifically like your job or your hair that is, you know, the source of your, you know, agony, you know, even just like as the person on the other end, the one who's like reaching out to someone who's suffering, right, saying like, well, maybe like look at all of these things, and those kind of like are like delaying tactics almost, and like saying, you know, you don't have to act right now. Let's stop and let's look at things one at a time and say, well, why don't we try a different job? And this is exactly what I did, because I was, you know, personally suffering. And I said, well, maybe I will leave my job and then we'll see. And if it's still bad after that, then maybe there's something else going on, you know, or like maybe I will change X, Y, Z. But these are, you know, even if it's not like a solution, it's a delaying tactic that will give someone more time to, you know, get help or feel better or, you know, adjust in a necessary way that doesn't result in them killing themselves, you know?
Yeah. There's nothing more courageous than that, right? Like buying yourself time, you know, like Harper, like a lot of folks will stay in a workplace because they're like, well, I don't want to take the risk of, you know, in losing that time and losing the certainty of this, you know, negative space for something that is completely unknown. But by taking that courageous leap and buying yourself time, you might actually discover something that's even greater than you can even imagine, you know? So, and yeah, like death is so final, and any moment that you're alive, there's a possibility of a great outcome for you, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I just want to say about Brando really quickly. That to me is the song that's the most relatable on the album. Just because, like, I genuinely in high school, I was so in love with this guy who, in retrospect, like, come on, Harper, you know, but like, I thought he was so cool. Like, he got me into like Kerouac and Ginsberg and all that shit, you know, like, and yeah, just like, you called me cerebral. I didn't know what you meant, but now I do. Would it have killed you to call me pretty instead? Right. Like, you know, like I feel Lucy as like a, you know, round faced, uncool girl, you know, I just, it's like, it's so real. That song to me is like she just peered into my life. Mm-hmm. So that one is special to me for that reason.
I'll quickly mention Going, Going, Gone. That's a highlight. Like, I love that mm-hmm. song.
So
the second verse, especially, like the sun set through a tantrum. It wasn't ready to go down yet. Mother Earth said time for bed. It resisted and the sky was red. It's like such beautiful imagery. And she's talking about like this sweet boy who, you know, was too shy to talk to Lucy, who eventually grows up to be this weird brute, like who has a daughter and like he's shitty to his daughter. And then she ties it to her own relationship with her own father and like the cycle of patriarchy and such. And yeah, she has empathy and sympathy for these like mediocre men, but it's also like, but primarily she's sympathetic and empathetic towards those affected by it more so than the perpetrators of it. And getting the Avengers of female singer-songwriters in the background to, like, you know, Mitski and the Phoebe Bridgers and Julian Bakers singing in the background is just like this balm over this, like, this human ache and pain that we all go through, you know? It's like the icy hot on your lower back and your lower
back.
Like
the lower back of your heart.
Yeah, the lower back of your heart. All right. So, yeah, let's go through final thoughts and ratings. The way this works is we'll rate this album out of 10 with a fun metric at the end. Who'd like to go first?
I can go first real quick. I mean, obviously, if you're listening to this, then you know how this is going to go. Great album, Lucy, great artist. I'm going to give this 9.5. Boy, she's a genius out of 10.
Love it, obviously. We didn't even talk about so many of the songs that I love. So yeah, it's amazing and it makes me feel a lot. I think it makes us all feel a lot. So I'm gonna give it 9.5 out of 10 locking lips and braces.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a sucker for the boys. I love some sad indie stuff. And yeah, this was like my first time listening through the album all the way pretty much. And I think it deserves to be listened to all the way through. I think there's obviously standout songs, but yeah, I mean, every song is pretty heartbreaking, but beautifully hopeful too. And so I will give it 10 thumbs in your friend's dad's eyes and his head exploding like Oberyn Martell from Game of Thrones out of 10.
Oh, what a scene. Oh, jeez Louise.
Rough.
Yeah, so I feel like I didn't do this album justice. Like there's some great stuff in there, but like it's very incomplete, very like a lot of it's unprocessed because a lot of my life is unprocessed in a lot of ways too. But that's okay. And you know, I want to be gentler to myself about this type of stuff and you know, prioritize on the fact that I got to spend the night tonight just talking with some friends about music, you know, holding space for each other, making silly jokes. And I really connected with this album. I have friends like this, and it's the best. Investing in a friend like this is one of the greatest things you could do in life. You know, more so than romantic connections, where in Ethan Hawke's, like, you know, the Before trilogy indicate that that love, that romantic love, probably happens like only a few times in your life. But a friendship like that's like it's more bountiful. I think it's like more bountiful in quantity and quality in a lot of ways. Yeah, she master songwriter. Boils these unique particular experiences that differ from my own into raw emotion so that I can connect and empathize even further and return to that childlike state. So I'm gonna give it 10. Oh, I don't know, sorry, I'm gonna give it Slayer at full volume out of 10. So that's a 10.
Nice.
Thank you so much. You can follow the show at IBMTLTT on Instagram and TikTok. You can follow me at Andrew Ambrose Lee on Instagram, Harper at Harping About on Instagram and TikTok, Stenley at Snapasten on Instagram, Sean at T1 underscore Sean.
Yeah, wait, can I plug some stuff though?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Okay. Well, I'm in three bands now. So I want to plug those bands. I play guitar in one band called Sorry Forever. You can follow us at SRRYFRVR. It's Sorry Forever without the vowels. That was an easier way to say it, but, and then I am also playing guitar in a band called Taurus Hate Club. They have music out on Spotify. You can listen to, some really great, acoustic songs. And then I play bass in a band called The Joy Machine, and they also have music out on Spotify, wherever you get music. Check us out.
So. That's sick. I don't even have three bands in my bank account.
I sent a Taurus Hate Club song to my friend, and so somewhere in a vegan cafe in Denver, they are playing your music.
Oh my god. That's awesome. Taurus Hate Club is the project of my friend Alyssa. So that was at 305 that you,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that whole album was like her solo basically. So I'm not playing on that unfortunately, but that's so cool. I'll pass that along to her.
Yeah. So that's the end of our episode. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a good day. Hey, click.